know that Rabbi Simon will touch on that necessarily, but all different types of minhagim that Rabbi Simon will get to. So, Rabbi, it's always a pleasure to have you. Yeah, I'll bring the shtender. We'll do it that way.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you. Give us 2 minutes to bring up the shtender.
We're going to play a little Simon Says.
Simon Says, exactly.
Okay, we're ready.
Okay, we're there soon. He's going to bring out the shtender, and then we'll start. What's your name?
I'm not Simon, but my name is Steinberg.
Steinberg.
Steinberg listens.
Are you a Levi?
No, that's true. There are many Steinbergs who are Levi.
That's right.
I am not one of them.
Okay. I know Steinberg in the community where I grew up, that one day he went to the kever, and he saw the family. He never thought he was a Levi. The Beis Olam, and he saw that he was descended from Levium. So from then on, he started taking the Levi Aliyah. Seagulls, right. The seagulls are usual. Yeah, sometimes the name... I can't have this on
my
okay. Want some water? Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay, Rabbi, first Brishus Harav. It's always a pleasure to be able to be here when Rabbi Kalafoff is here. I think last year also Zoicha to have him here. You know, to either before, during, or after Sackett Lake. So it's always a pleasure to be here, and always a pleasure. Rabbi Lichter, you know, I go back, you know, when Rabbi Axelrod invited me to come to speak some long time ago. And Baruch Hashem, we've kept the tradition. We've kept the tradition for many, many, many years. So Brishus Harav, Brishus all the Chashuv and Mispalim, and so it's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to be here.
Is it a year that you've been here?
Yeah, I was here last year also on a Sunday morning.
The topic,
kashering others? Yeah, that was one. Very good. That's kashering. Yeah. Okay. So hopefully this will be a good one too. And yeah. And feel free to ask any question that you like. I don't like to lecture. I like to, you know, people to speak up and hear what you have to say.
No problem.
And we can have an interesting interactions together. Okay. Okay. So this is it, Rabosar. There are two types of minhagim that we could speak about, like a communal minhag. Right? In other words, like we know that the Ashkenazic community doesn't eat kidneys on Pesach.
Yeah.
So that's that's a communal minhag. And then there could be the Svarta community has different minhagim. Interesting, just come to mind, you know, in Brooklyn, in the Syrian community, they don't allow any converts into their community. I don't know if you'd call that a minhag. It's, they don't allow it, right? Anyone who knows the Syrian community, even if Moshe Rabbeinu would do the Geiris, I don't think they would allow it, because I think they thought that if they'll allow Gerim into the community, then all their people will start dating non-Jewish women who will convert, and that's the Syrian practice in Brooklyn.
Does it go against the Torah?
Does it go against the Torah? Yeah, maybe it does go against the Torah, but you know, sometimes you have Rabbanim who have a lot of insight to their community and know, you know, that could, you know, cause problems in the community.
You have a lot of Jared Kushner.
Yeah, I don't want to mention specific names, but yeah, you could have a lot of...
You had a lot more, you'd be better off.
So, Rus was the guest, so...
Yeah, Rus, I mean...
Do they read Rus on
Jewish? Well, Sfardim, I don't know if Sfardim read... Sfardim read Rus on... Yeah, okay.
Maybe not Syria.
Maybe not, yeah. Right, we didn't... Right. But I think it was a very wise move on their part. That's my opinion. That the Syrian Rabbanim had a lot of foresight to understand... every Rav has to understand the pulse of his community and know what works and what doesn't work in that community. And... Well, I have to tell you, I am a product. What Rabbi Berzon Zatzal, who's my Rav growing up, he always says, I come from a mixed marriage. My father's an Ashkenazi, my mother's from the Turkish Jewry.
You're saying that you agree with everything that the Iranian community, that particular one you agree with?
Yeah, right, yeah. Like anything in life. We don't have to agree with anything, you know. I was just saying blanket statements about any community, you know. But I grew up. My grandmother and my mother would speak to each other in Ladino. That was the spoken language in the house. Not with my father. My father doesn't know, but with my grandfather. My Sephardic grandfather passed away before I was born, and my mother. And my grandmother lived with us all the years, and they would speak Ladino to each other, etc. Yeah. So you have minhagim of the community, and you have minhagim of yechidim, of private, you know, practices that people have. Rabbi Lichter just mentioned the Nusach of Hatfila, that art scroll just came out with the, you know, we're waiting for this, you know, for the Eidot Mizrach Siddur. And Nusach Hatfila is something also that is transferred from Minhag. In fact, there's a very interesting question that comes up that I have sometimes when we have an Ashkenazi and a Sephardi who get because the Tashbetz writes that when it comes to Minhagim, the wife is supposed to follow the minhag of the husband. Because that's like going, the halacha is when you go from one location to another location, and one location has a certain minhag, another minhag, and you're not planning to go back to your original makom. So you're coming into the new location, so you follow the minhagim of the new location. So we hope, whenever there's a marriage, that she's coming into his domain and not planning to go back. That's a... Yes, sometimes, right. So when it comes to Nusach HaTfilah, that's a very interesting question. There's, a woman once called me, her husband's Sephardi, and she got married, and now it's before Yom Noraim. I mean, to tell you the truth, if I would have to change my Nusach, I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, because it's so different. Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah davening is so... You know, so Rav Yitzchak Abadi pointed out to me that he thought that this halacha of following the minhag of the spouse, of the husband, does not apply to Nusach HaTfilah. Because he thought that the idea is if you have a minhag about something being mutter or usser, for example, kitnios, right? So kitnios is something that the Ashkenazic community took upon themselves because they were afraid that they would get mixed up with grains and have some type of chashash of chametz if you use the kitnios, and the Sephardi came upon themselves that chashash. So therefore, when a Sephardi girl marries an Ashkenazi fellow, so now she could eat kitnios on Pesach, or vice versa, if a Ashkenazic man marries a Sephardic woman, marries him, Now she has to stop eating Kitnios on Pesach. There is a question of Isser v'Heter. Something's Osser, something's Mutter. When it comes to davening, so it's not Osser Mutter. It's just two different types of davening. And therefore, everybody thought that she didn't have to change her nusach. Now, it might be something she might want to do or not want to do, depending upon her comfort level and how she's planning to be mechanic her children, etc. But that's not, everybody thought that that's not part of this concept of following your spouse in the question of nusach hatfila.
We have this question back in here in our community. We have, let's say, somebody who has a Sephardi nusach and davens or comes to school to Kaddish. So I believe that the halacha is they should be saying an Ashkenazi Kaddish.
Right. In other words, like Rav Moshe writes, anything that's done out loud, publicly, or something like that, you have to follow the minhag hamakom because it just becomes chaotic.
So
nusach hatfila meaning it's not subject. It's that's alts derech eretz for the community. So technically speaking. As people have pointed out, Rav Gutman, other people have pointed out that the concept of kihila, you see, there used to be in Europe, there were real kihilos. Here, you know, we have shuls, right? And shuls are great. We have great shuls. But the concept of, like Rav Gutman pointed out, of the idea of a kihila is a place where they have their own kashrus and their own mikveh and their own, it's a whole kihila, like mainly in Hasidish communities today. My wife always points out that in Elizabeth, that's what Rabbi Teitz, he made, at least when he was there and in charge, there wasn't like five different, it was all under him, with his mikveh and his shechita, and that's a concept of a kihila. And then if you're planning to be part of that kehila, so then now you're accepting the minhagim of that kehila. A shul is not, as Rav Chaim Kalman Gutman of Kosher Talmud Chacham of Williamsburg pointed out, that a shul today, let me explain what I want to say, so you shouldn't be any misinterpretations. A shul today does not have the status of a kehila in terms of that now I'm part of the kehila, I follow their minhagim, meaning, in other words, you want to daven in shul here, whatever you want to daven, as long as you don't make it in a way that people, in other words, if you're davening different, Mizrach Siddur, and daven quietly and no one knows what you're doing, bothering anybody, goes into hate. Because in a shul, there are, the way the shul operates and the nusach, so you can't go ahead and now you're going to do your thing publicly. That's als derech eretz to the shul. That's not als, changing a minhag.
What about the shul starts Shabbos at 7, and Shabbos really starts at 8:15?
Oh, excellent question. So this is the question you're asking. In other words, this is a twofold question. In other words, normally we said before, a woman follows the minhagim of the husband.
The sukkah.
Yeah, so one second, let me see one thing at a time. So this happens all the time. The husband's going to this early minyan, and the wife is struggling to get all the food cooked and everything done, on time, especially early minyan. And so it's a struggle. So sometimes she might need extra time beyond the time that, and especially these days where people want to daven plag and extra, whatever. So it's a challenge. So Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva that accepting Shabbos early does not have a status of a minhag. That's not called a minhag. It's just done for convenience. Whereas if you would do it the whole year, you accept Shabbos early because you're makbid on the mitzvah Tosefta Shabbos, and you want to make sure you're accepting Shabbos. So that could be called a minhag. And then your wife should should follow that minhag. But when it comes to this thing that we do in the summer, nothing. It's not. I mean, that requires its own sheer, you know, the pros and the cons of the early Shabbos. But Lamaisa, that's what people do, and they do it for convenience. It's not an aveira, but they do it for convenience. I mean, I make up with my wife. We have this pshara. It's including we do late, and after Shavuot, then we do. That's our way of operating. She would probably want to have early, until after right after Pesach. I would probably have late, you know, till who knows how long. And so that's our pshara. That's how we operate. But so he says that if a woman really needs to do malacha past the time that the husband accepted Shabbos, then technically that would be permissible, because it wouldn't be, you know, obviously up to Shkia or time that you do it, that would be okay. Because it's not a minhag. It's just convenience. So it doesn't even, in other words, not everything you do is a minhag. My minhag is, and in other words, it has to have a certain chashivas to even qualify to be a minhag. You understand? So that's what he said, that's what Rav Moshe writes. That's not even a minhag. And then he discusses, and Rav Abadi said this to me as well, that the concept of if you have one shul in the community, this we usually don't have, unless you go away to some summer place where there's one, you know, and they, so the technical halacha is, if the community accepts Shabbos early, one shul in the community, then everyone has to accept Shabbos early. So there's a discussion, and that in that shul from Rav Moshe, Rav Abadi told me also that it could be that, according to some poskim, that also that wouldn't be considered, that halacha of following the tzibur maybe doesn't apply in such a situation where you're only doing it out of convenience.
So why aren't the Sfarim concerned with mixing
the grain? Yeah, I mean, it's because maybe they feel that, it's not going to get mixed up and, look, it's a chiddush to aser kitnius, right? It's a chiddush to aser. So they never had a tradition to make this new chumrah. You know, anything could happen, but we can't make our own gzeiros. But in the Ashkenazi community, they accepted upon themselves that they should act this way. The Sephardim never did. And but I know, you know, there is a push in the world today to, you know, people had enough with the kidneys thing. Right. So that's why I think we have to be more stark with the kidneys. I happen to think, I'm of the opinion, not everyone agrees with me, but I'm of the opinion that quinoa is kidneys. Others disagree, mm-hmm. But, so we know, my wife knows, even though there are quinoas that have hechsherim, you know, could have for Pesach, but I feel, if I care, we have to be strong on the other side. I really didn't think it was kidneys, but, that's a whole... it's not obstacle for the community. I'm telling you what I, tell people.
You consider brachos part of Nisach?
Brachos?
If an Ashkenaz woman married a Sephardic man, her minhag is to say bracha leshe basukka, and the Sephardim don't. Is she not allowed to say
Right, that's an excellent question. Because Sephardim don't say brachas on mitzvah esei shazman grama. So it could be that if you're a Sephardic lady and you marry Ashkenazic, if you're, Ashkenazic marry Sephardic, then she might, she probably should stop saying. Because that's an issur v'heter thing. That's not just a question of nusach. That's the Sfarim hold that it's a brachah l'batala to say, for a woman to say leishe basuko while alatila salulov and things like that. So that's not just which nusach we use. This is issur v'heter. So then the Sephardic tradition is not to, and the Ashkenazic tradition is they do. And I happen to think the simple pshat is like the Sephardim, but okay, you know, but people, you know, the Gemara says that lasos nachas ruach lanoshim, we let them do certain things, you know, to make them happy.
That should be the worst thing.
That should be, yeah.
What's the situation if you can find out that you are in certain concept, in certain level,
yeah,
and maybe even some Sephardi and maybe some Ashkenazi, that there are groups that follow Ari, and Ari is Sephardi, but many other things they follow Ashkenazi, like on Shabbat they follow Ashkenazi. What are you supposed to do? Isn't it that you guide you in that path and follow?
In other words, you're saying which situation? Where?
Like Chabad.
Chabad, maybe I haven't.
You mean if you become Chabad is Makar of you,
right,
and you want to accept their?
I become Bar Teshuva with certain Rabbah.
Right.
Right.
And your father was not observed.
He wasn't religious. No.
Right.
My family wasn't religious. Now, right, I have to follow either Sephardi or Ashkenazi, or follow the path that rabbi opened up for me.
Right.
My feeling is always I follow when it doesn't hurt. I follow the right thing, what I learned in the beginning. And if I have to do different in community, I say it quite
right. In other words, you can't. In other words, anything you're going to do that's different than the place where you're davening, you do quietly. Right.
Right.
And then if you, and then some people say you can follow. I've heard that opinion, to follow your Rebbe if you don't have a family tradition. That's an excellent question, yeah.
And then those who do, if the Kehillah doesn't, and some people do, they're supposed to daven in the back of the room.
Question about, so putting a tefillin on Chol HaMoed is also a question of Minhagim, and there's an opinion of the Stechemed, and Rav Moshe Bicker, I was told, held like this as well, even though that's not the common practice, that this does not follow your father's minhag or not, because this is a question of halacha. Meaning like this, everyone agrees that kitnias is mutter. It's just a minhag whether we should be choshish for the extra thing or not. But when it comes to tefillin Chol HaMoed, that's a question of what's the halacha. Is this the halacha or that is the halacha? And therefore, that might not have to... So if you become... Your father did one thing and now you become more learned and you think the Ikra halacha is the other way, so the Stechemet says you don't have to follow your father. But in practice, in reality, it's just going to be... It's not going to work well. So the best thing is just to follow your father in such a thing. Because there is a question whether minhagim are family minhagim or only from location. In other words, if your father did, because the Gemara says in Chulin, the Gemara says that a certain rabbi said, I'm nothing compared to my father. My father, when he ate meat, he wouldn't eat milchiks for 24 hours. And I only wait from one meal to another. So the question is, so why did he follow his father's practice? So the prez, because there's no such thing as following your father's practice. It's only if your father comes from a locale that everyone is doing that, so then you follow the minhag hamakom. But there's no such thing as minhag hamishpacha. That's the opinion of the Pri Chodesh. And the Pri Tohar, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says no. There is also a concept of a personal minhag, that you follow your father's personal minhag, but only if your father is asking you to do so. So here, he didn't necessarily ask his son to do so. So so therefore he wasn't
isn't that the source for where we learn how much time
yeah yeah that's the whole sugya. That's the exact sugya, exactly. Just recently a Talmud of mine called me up from Eretz Yisrael, and he said he's been keeping 72 minutes after Shabbos, like the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, which I probably he claims, which is probably true, that I recommended him doing so, but that's a separate discussion. And then when he got married, so his wife, she took upon that as well. And now, after several years of marriage, especially this time of year, where Shabbos ends very late, she's upset about that. And I don't want to use the word resentful. Maybe the word is resentful. And the question is, so what? How should we approach? I wanted to discuss it with somebody who respects seven. You know, some people 72 minutes is not on their radar. I have a relationship with the Nitei Gavriel, Rav Gavriel Tziner. So he's an open-minded Hasidic Shapoisik. And he said to me he thinks she should make Hataras Nedarim. She make Hataras Nedarim, and then she wouldn't have it, because it's a question of Shalom Bayis. So he's going to still keep it. She doesn't have the resentment of him not keeping it. Because he's 72 minutes, if you're in shul, you're ready to daven 45, and it takes 15 minutes to daven, and the time you walk home, it's already. If you're a woman at home, and you're ready, it's 45 minutes already, and then the husband's not coming home for another half an hour, she wants to already start to clean the house and to do things. It's a much harder thing. That half an hour, you know, it might be a harder thing for them to do. So Mamela, she wanted to, Hataras Nedarim, it's brought down the Sefer Kol Nidre. There, when you make Hataras Nedarim, we have a Harata and a thing like that. So it's brought down in the Chashulchan or Stipler, that you're not supposed to be miskari. Because you didn't noteworthy, that was good. So you shouldn't be miskari. But like we say in Hataras Nedarim, ain't any miskari, but what should you say? You miskari that you didn't say Beli Neder. Because we have a concept, if you do something that's meritorious, that's considered like a neder, even though you didn't articulate. It's a neder midrabanan. So therefore, if you have to stop it, the Noda Buda says, if you want to stop it temporarily, because there's something that you need to do and that you can't do it right now, but you plan to go back, then according to the Dogen Bravov, you don't even need Hataras Nedarim. But if you want to stop it indefinitely, then you should do Hataras Nedarim. So that's what we...
if somebody is keeping, like if we're in the synagogue, time Shabbat is over. And there are some people, if it's Shabbat was 8 o'clock, 8:01, Shabbat is over. If it comes to an emergency, you can follow that.
Right, so say there maybe in certain situations...
In an emergency
situation, maybe, but then the next week you're going to plan to go back to the regular. I mean, but even an emergency, what the emergency is, if pikuach nefesh is one thing, but
go to a party.
When I was younger, I used to follow Ashkenaz Rav from Yosef, but you don't follow an Sephardi Rav. Years ago. Now, today, people mix, Rabbi Avadi Yosef says, one thing is fine, it's accepted by everybody. Or Moshe says something, it's accepted by, hopefully, everybody. But now, everyone is accepted as beginning of Pesach.
Right, well, just because a Sephardic Rav said something doesn't mean it's only for Sephardim. And just because an Ashkenazic, there's certain things that are just for Sephardim, like we spoke about... you know, kitnios versus not kitnios, or you know, certain things the Sephardim do, and you know, etc.
So you can you follow the Rambam or you follow Rashi, but we knew it was a separation between the two of them.
Right.
Today, I feel it's all mixed.
Well, it depends on, you know, the particular situation.
Look, there's many laws that then it was true and you needed it, but now it doesn't take place. You're becoming a minhag and you're carrying on.
Right, just because they...
It says becoming a gezara, you don't need it because of that and that.
Right, but certain things, there was a chazal made a takana, and even though the reason doesn't apply, we still have to keep it. Some things I've been hugging, but like taking medicine on Shabbos. You know, there's an issue to take medicine on Shabbos because they used to grind the herbs. And even though no one's going to, just because you take a pill on Shabbos doesn't mean you're going to grind the herbs today. But that's a halacha, like it's brought down, like Rav Shech explains, that's because that was the takana and that can't be repealed. Unless the Sanhedrin one day will repeal it because the reasoning doesn't really apply anymore. And that I think is one of the main divides between Orthodoxy and other branches. You know, other branches of Judaism have said that anything that we don't think logically applies anymore, we just dismiss. Yom Tov Sheni, right? There's certain branches of Judaism already, you know, did away with that.
Even the Orthodox in Israel.
Yeah, in other words, it's been more common, the practice, you know, there are different opinions. When a person goes to Eretz Israel and plans to come back, right after Yom Tov, whether he keeps 2 days or 1 day. So the old psak, and this psak goes as far back as the Shulchan Aruch, as Rav Yosef Karo, even though he didn't write it in the Shulchan Aruch, but he wrote a Tshuva Sefer called Avkas Rochel, and his Tshuva Sefer he writes that if you're planning to come back after Yom Tov, and you're coming from Chutz La'aretz, you keep 2 days. And that was a very common minhag. The Chacham Tzvi was the one who said to keep only 1 day. He says because the idea of keeping 2 days because you're planning to come back is only when the minhag is a minhag that could have existed either place, and one place has the minhag and one place doesn't have the minhag, so then you follow then it's a question of minhag hamachom. But if Eretz Yisrael can't have this minhag, you understand? So then we don't say that since you're planning to go home and you live in America where they keep 2 days, because in Eretz Yisrael that minhag, see, a minhag about kidneys could be anywhere, theoretically. So then you follow the minhag hamakom or where you came from, etc. But a minhag that only is shayach in a certain locale, right? Like Yom Tov Sheni was not shayach to have in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore the idea of minhag from where you're coming from in America doesn't apply, and therefore he says that everyone keeps 1 day. Others disagree with that because the Rambam, you really could have 2 days in Eretz Yisrael. That's because you only keep 1 day in Eretz Yisrael if you lived in a place where the Edim came when they had Edus LP for the accepting of the moon. You know when it was. But if you live in a place where the Edim didn't get to, even if you're in Eretz Yisrael, it would be 2 days. So that's a question. So today, I don't know, people just, you know, the society, people have this notion that they don't want to keep 2 days in Eretz Yisrael. There is the Chacham Tzvi to rely on. The Alter Rebbe, you know, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, wrote a Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, and he passed in that way. But the question is that really, the proper thing for people to be doing who are not necessarily following the Chacham Tzvi? So, that's a question of, but you know, because, but things do change in terms of these things, but that's why you have to ask your rabbi. Thinks the proper, you know, but you should ask. In other words, people a lot of times just don't ask. They say, I'm going, I'm doing, etc. You know, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has this interesting shita that if you're able to go for all the three regalim to Eretz Yisrael, even though you live in America and you're going to come back, so he held that you're considered a tosha of Eretz Yisrael, Gabe the Gimel Regalim. Not everyone accepts that either, but that's what he said. So, it's an interesting, it's a fascinating topic of that idea. I had just received an interesting shaila that came up recently, just this past Shavuos. I don't know if you heard of the Rabbi Nosson Kamenetsky. Rabbi Nosson Kamenetsky wrote the famous book "Making of a Gadol." It's a fascinating book that he wrote on, you know, the Gadolim stories, which he believes are true stories, or not the ones that are normally printed in the regular books, you know. So he got a lot of flack for that. But I used to know him because he was the son-in-law of the Rosh Yeshiva of David Lifshitz. And so he, as long as Reb David and his Rebbetzin were alive, he would frequent Washington Heights quite often. So what happened was that he has a daughter in L.A. So she was coming in to Yantif with her parents in Yerushalayim. And she was keeping 2 days. She was keeping 2 days of yoga, because that's what she was following. And then Rav Nosson passed away Friday night. It was Shabbos and then the 2 days of yoga. He passed away Friday night. And then what happened was, the Kfura was Sunday night, because in Eretz Yisrael, they keep 1 day. But for her, it was still in the middle of Yontif. So it was. Yeah, right. The Gemara says that you're allowed to, but we don't necessarily do that. The Gemara says that you really can bury somebody on Yontif, but with a Goy of Yontif Rishon and even a Yisrael Yontif Sheni, and there's some communities, Hasidic communities, but even Broyers use some. Some used to do it, don't do it anymore, but...
The Avelis starts once you're
buried. Right, so...
It was
the middle of Yom Kippur.
So
there was a discussion.
So
I think what she did was, like a regular person who dies in the middle of Chol HaMoed, that you start... In other words, Shavuos doesn't have a Chol HaMoed.
Right.
So usually, a person's going to die in Shavuos, Rahman al-Islam, everything's going to be, the burial will be afterwards. Because we don't have Chol HaMoed Shavuos. But for her, it was a Chol HaMoed Shavuos. Because it took, the burial took place for her between the first day of Yontif and the second day of Yontif, because in Eretz Yisrael, it was already, Yontif was over. So
it
was Saturday
night then. Yeah. First day of the Shavuos was Saturday?
No.
They wanted to do the burial on Saturday night.
No, this year, Shavuos started Saturday night.
Yeah. I remember many years ago, there was a case in the Hasidic community, and this I like to always speak about the candles. The candles took fire, and somebody passed away from a fire on Shavuos, and they buried her on Yontif. I think it was in Satmar that this happened. That's why I'm, the different, talking about Menhagim, about how many candles do you light? Some people light candle for every child they have, for every grandchild they have. I told my wife, we're getting married, we're only going to light 2 candles. Shomer v'zocher. That's the Ikker Halacha. Shomer v'zocher. That's the Shem. We should have a nice family, but we don't. That doesn't mean we have to light candles. My sheet is, the less fire, the better. And we see how different stories now, tragedies that happen, hot plates and different things that happen. So if it was up to me, I like the Sephardic tradition on Hanukkah. One, I think that's the greatest. The Sephardim have it right over there. They have it right in a lot of things, but my children would never go for that.
You can't pick and choose either.
Right. You can't pick and choose, but it's a question what the real halacha should be even for Ashkenazim. But if it was up to me, I would say we should all do one menorah. I would say one menorah for yeshivas also. I would say one menorah for the whole yeshiva. And not everyone, because unfortunately there have been fires in yeshivas over Hanukkah, you know, and people, you know, it's a tremendous thing. So I would say, these things are very, but when it comes, with this idea of, you know, of lighting a candle for every child, some people have this minhag, but, you know, it's not a minhag like kidneys. What?
It's a family.
Yeah, so and right, it's not a minhag on Malcolm necessarily, and it's not like my family told me you have to keep this tradition. So
people have a minhag of having a yurt side candle for everybody's
Yeah.
And that's a bad thing that also.
Okay. I mean yeah,
but the Hanukkah on the house, the mistress at the house has to have a menorah.
Yeah.
Not every individual in it. So
that's the question where
it's making it a chumrah.
That's the question based on the Ashkenazim and the Sfarim. The Ashkenazic tradition seems to be that everyone should have their own menorah. And the Sfarim tradition is not. But even the Sfarim, the Rambam, discusses there were different places that had different minhagim. But a minhag is something that's very important. The Maril speaks about changing the tunes of davening. You know, not to change minhagim of the... You know, it's not a simple manner. Menhagim is, you know, they say from Rav Tzadok that today that the Torah Shebaal Peh is written down. So what's the real Torah Shebaal Peh that's left is Menhagim. You know, Menhagim is a very, I wrote a sefer on Menhagim because it's such an important part of Yiddishkeit. Is, you know, and as we said before, you have to know not everything that people do is called a minhag. I told you, like accepting Shabbos early, what people do. That doesn't even warrant to be called a minhag. Not everything is called a minhag. You know, some things it's just people do it, but it has no basis. Minhagim have. That's why Rav Shaklin pointed out Rav Salvechik always would give shiurim on minhagim to explain what the halachic basis is. Because if you do something that, you know, it's not necessarily even considered a minhag.
The idea of lighting a candle for everybody, not a minhag, say it's a menorah. I think
well, that's on Hanukkah, right.
Right.
Right, but the question is two ways to learn that Gemara. Well, it can be a minute which opinion that you follow of how to interpret that can learn. And
is that a minhag, or is that a transmitted from one minhag?
Yeah, okay, so that could be a minhag of which way you follow.
In the side.
Right,
they
those days...
Follow the fires.
Right, those days they lit the candles outside. Right. That's a question whether we should light outside or light in Eretz Yisrael. They light outside. And here we do it indoors. But you know, the Vilna Gaon had different minhagim of things like that. And as we saw, tefillin Chol HaMoed in Eretz Yisrael, that became that everyone in Eretz Yisrael doesn't put on tefillin in Chol HaMoed because the original Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael was the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and but it's important to know, you know, to balance minhagim and to make sure if you're doing something, different than the rest of the community, to do it b'tzina, you know, because I said the idea of a shul today doesn't necessarily have the koach of the kehila that everyone is bound. But if there are rules of the shul, there's a decorum, and everyone has to be respectful of that. Not necessarily alt minhag, but derech eretz of the decorum of the shul. You know, that the shul makes, you know, and when you're in the confines of the building of the shul, then you have to, you know, and those are the rules of the shul, you have to follow those rules. Not al tochas minah, but al derech eretz for the shul.
So he raised the question for, there's so many people who are now becoming baal tshuvas, okay? Is there a set concept as to who they follow?
Right, so sometimes they follow, like I think everybody mentioned, that the father wasn't from, but the mother was from, you know. Normally you don't follow the mother, but maybe sometimes the mother was from, the father wasn't from.
Is there a set rule of what you're
Yeah, somebody once called me with the following question. A woman was married, she got married, she followed her husband's minhag, and she didn't eat gebraks on Pesach. Then the question is, after the husband passes away, so what happens then? Because one of her daughters married a Sephardi, and he eats gebraks. So now she's going to be going to their house for Pesach, now that her husband's not alive. So what does she do? So the Tashbeit says, you follow the Pasuk in Chumash. What does it say in Chumash? It says, when you marry a Kohen, you can eat Truma, even if you're not a Kohen. But once the husband dies, so it depends. If you have children, so then you continue your husband's minhag. If you don't, then meaning if you continue your husband, and you could eat the truma once, but if there's no son, she goes back to her father's home, so to speak, and she can't eat truma. So the Tashbeit makes a parallel between that and the Hagim as well. So therefore, she had children. So therefore, I told her that she.